that one on.
I can't get on that side of the table.
I'm gonna try out my new
You left? Oh, you recorded?
We recorded.
Yeah, I got authorization from Steve Cox to get a podium, a lectern.
A podium?
Well, a little lectern.
Oh, good.
Put it on wheels so it can slid all over the place.
Cool. All right.
And then it was hailing for a while there. I took a break.
I don't know which way to point this. It'll be the best. Okay, I'll just do that.
Okay.
It rolled.
Well, our semi-meeting of the Boulder Planning Commission will come to order. We've got Perry on the phone. Obviously, we don't have a quorum. We weren't sure if Donna Jean would show up. Tabor had to go deal with his rental in Nevada. They had some sort of an emergency. And then Colleen is actually on a planning training course, which is exciting. And we had on the agenda, so we can't approve last month's minutes. And we had on the agenda that Curtis, our zoning administrator, would do a training session on accessory dwelling units. And we'd also talk about how to go ahead with vacation home rental discussions. But with emails between the three of us, we thought it'd be better to postpone that for the next meeting when the others are here.
You know, since some people have come and it's on the housing group thing, we could do an abbreviated discussion of it, and we can take it up with the commissioners next time, if that's what people want to, something they're interested in.
That'd be great.
Okay, we can do that when we get into this. That would be terrific, because I'd like to hear.
Okay.
So we thought that what we would do is use this meeting to take the report that the housing group sent us, and then Leilani had sent notes on what economic development had come up with, which I emailed to the others, and really look at what we've been talking about in planning and how to either, for instance, we've been working on short-term rentals, particularly RV parks, and started on ADUs. We've talked about clustering. So those are all things that are in these reports. So to look at the feedback from your groups and then how planning, you know, the elements of that planning can take into those discussions going forward as planning then works on it. And then there's also going to be an open house on the 20th, and that date was chosen just because that was the room availability, and we didn't want it to get too much, you know, if it's May, it'll never happen. And so the groups have already been, you know, reached out to a few people in each group so that they would reach out to the others. And then the idea is that they will present on some kind of poster board. Is that science? Cheryl's going to get them. The science kind of triptych poster board and put on there, however they want to do it, the recommendations, proposals, what they came up with, so that people can go around and look at those and talk to, you know, be a representative from each group. So there to talk to and find out have conversation. And the idea is that the planning commissioners will also go to that and have those conversations because, you know, not everybody has gone to every meeting to know what everyone's been talking about. So that'll be the time to really, to say thank you to everybody for really being willing to put in what was a lot of hard work, a lot of time. And for everybody to have that moment to say, oh my gosh, you know, this is what this town actually came together and did. And I think that's, you know, I'm still in awe that people did that and did not walk out. I just think what everybody did was fantastic. So it's also a chance for everybody to really celebrate that. And it'll be in that room. Coming from the community identity side, some of the things that were, you know, themes were keeping Boulder, keeping fields open and watered, Ranching is a key part of the tradition and community. And something I'm seeing, and you know, I don't know about land use, I haven't had reports back from that, but Peg's on one of them. This, what comes up as I read these reports is this idea of really how to keep Boulder for Boulder, how to have small businesses that support Boulder residents, and you know, so it's going to be tricky. But a lot of really good, solid work. So, and this, I'll just make an open discussion, because otherwise it's just me talking. And so Perry, chime in when you want. So, it's mostly housing that's in front of me, right?
No.
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 Land use. Oh, okay, land use. Excellent.
And Mark, you're in land use.
Oh, okay, good, because then we can get some feedback on land use. Okay, so, you know, we started on ADUs, we've been talking about RV parks, clustering, all those kinds of things. Do you want to start with housing? And we'll go through this, and then, does that sound like it? I mean, you're the majority.
Well, when is Curtis going to say what he's going to say?
Well, how ADUs is under housing, so we could, that would be, because you were going to talk about ADUs, right?
I can't prepare to do that.
Okay. Well, then
we don't have a quorum, so we're not having a whole regular meeting today. Mm-hmm. More or less of an informal one, say discussion. Or,
yeah.
Okay. So, you want to talk about ADUs?
Yes.
Okay. Basically, the bright line on ADUs, as I think you're trying to use the term, now an accessory dwelling unit could mean any number of things, but the way it's traditionally used. And I didn't circulate to everybody, but I circulated a couple of ordinances, one from Springdale, one from Cottonwood Heights up in Salt Lake, just at random, pull them up on Google. And basically, a lot of jurisdictions are trying to address ADUs, meaning a rental unit. You know, so the bright line here is, there's a commercial transaction. It's either employee housing or be part of a compensation package, or you're collecting rents. The Planning Commission got into a scenario a while back where they were thinking, well, anything that could be rented out would be an ADU. And so I guess you could say that, but that's, you know, you've got to define your term and say, well, what do we want an ADU to mean? So just so we have a common language here. The folks on the corner over here, the Picklers, built a guest house. It's for their kids to stay in, or their friends to stay in. Was that an ADU? It had probably a little kitchen in it, or whatever, bathroom, bedroom. Under the way we're using this discussion, as I understand it, that's not an ADU. Building a extra bedroom off the garage, attached or detached, is not an ADU in the way it's being traditionally used. So the way that other jurisdictions are doing this is the stated purpose behind this legislation is to have more rentals, more dispersed, and more readily available, especially in areas like Springdale where you have a real employee housing crunch. And they're trying to make more housing available where people don't have to drive a long ways to come to town to work every day. And so what they have done is they just, and it goes any number of different ways, but what they've done is said any building that you currently have on your property that you want to turn into an ADU, it's got to be existing, you can do that under certain conditions. There's a size limitation. Generally runs about 1,000 square feet. There's some other limitations, and they do it through the, they don't do it as a conditional use. Cottonwood Heights has a size limitation, a parking limitation, or a parking requirement. They have separation, there's fencing requirements, all that. But they're on, you know, they're on quarter, half acre lots and stuff. When you're out in a larger area like Boulder, some of that stuff probably kind of is meaningless. In Springdale, what they're doing, and I don't quite understand why, but the draft at least they're considering right now, what they're doing is saying you can only use an existing building. If you want to build an accessory building, a guest cottage for your kids to come stay in, you can't rent it out for 5 years. And I'm like, well, if you're trying to provide additional housing, why are you doing that? But that's what they're doing. And unless, I don't know what the final forms you would like, but that's where their latest draft that I got off their town website shows up right now. So it's, there's different ways that you can approach it, but I think what you're really trying to understand and what the input the planning commission would like to have in your group is if you're looking for additional rentals in town, which seems to be a real need, then this is a really good way to address it. And I think that anybody can encourage to build one on their property. If you got 5 acres, easily it holds it. If you got 2.5 acres, easily it holds it. And so it can be attached, it can be detached, but, you know, dwelling under our ordinance, the definition of a dwelling is a place where you occupy it and sleep. And so then we have the additional factor of rent. And it's pretty straightforward, and from everything I understand, the public policy arguments are, a lot of people are in favor of that. I don't know fully how everybody feels, but that kind of gives you the basis of what we would call an ADU. And I'm not sure what you guys would call it, but if that's what you can call it, then we're on the same page. So, any questions? Any?
Do ADUs always afford, can they have like bathrooms and kitchens and things like that?
Yes.
Or is it just bedrooms?
No. An ADU in like Cottonwood Heights, you're required to have so much of a kitchen, you're required to have a bathroom, you're required to have sleeping space, because it's got to qualify as a true rental. And their minimum rental period in Cottonwood Heights is 30 days. So it cannot be a transient rental. You have to rent it out for 30 days plus. It's either got to be month to month, or it's got to be a lease for, you know, a longer term. In Springdale, they have said it can only be for 90 days or more. And there's, you know, they're trying to address the transient rental situation, the Airbnb situation and all that. But there's a Utah law, we've talked about this before, there's a Utah case, Brown versus Sandy, and it pretty much kind of says anything over 30 days, beware. They say right in there, they use 30 days and kind of talk about the rationale for and after, and they kind of say, you know, if you make it 30 days, we're probably okay with it. But we don't think you can prohibit anybody from renting their property for, you know, maybe, okay, not for the weekend, but if they want to rent it for 30 days. So in other words, what they're saying is if you want to do it once every 30 days as a transient rental, you can probably do it. So anyway, it's still up here.
The definitions in most of the jurisdictions we've worked in, if it's got a kitchen, then it's, you know, it could be, that's how they define it as an ADU. So it's a separate kitchen.
It doesn't have to have a bathroom, does it?
Yeah, but the key to whether it's an ADU or not, it could be just a guest room. If it's just a bathroom.
Well, see, that's, and jurisdictions are going to slice this differently. The way these guys are doing it, they're slicing along the lines of commercial transaction. Do you want to build a mother-in-law in the basement? Next, you know, attached, detached, whatever, They're not trying to prohibit that. So what they're trying to say is, you know, your millennial kids are all coming home.
Right.
And their television viewing habits aren't compatible with yours. So you can, they're pretty much saying you can have a guest house that's fairly well equipped and not afoul of anything. Then you're over into, well, it's an accessory building and you've got lot coverage, 20% on 5 acres, 30% on 2.5, et cetera, et cetera. It's all on the table of uses, so, but every jurisdiction is differently, and it wouldn't surprise me that some jurisdictions say, well, if it's a kitchen, then what, they regulate it differently, even though you're not...
Well, just, that's just what makes it an ADU.
Well, see, that's where our terms, that's where we get all scrambled up here.
Yeah, I know.
So we have to, maybe we should get a different designation.
Well, I was trying to figure out what it is we really want to do.
Yeah, that's a very valid point, because the term ADU, you could, you know, what does that mean? So you just have to say, well, this is what we're going to make it mean here.
Right.
And if you're going to make it mean a rental unit, then let's do that. Then everything else is just part of your home and your accessory buildings.
The only point in the housing committee's report, or whatever, the housing group, work group, I don't know, whatever you call it, just for you all to know, everything was on, we just wrote that if being used for short-term rental, owner or property manager must either live in a single-family dwelling or ADU, if the single-family dwelling is being used as a short-term rental. And then we just wrote seek short-term rentals, because we did a whole section on it.
Right.
That we didn't, as a group, say that they should or shouldn't. Obviously, our group's purpose was housing for people that lived here. But we also felt as a group that it wasn't our place to say, tell people what they could or could not do with their property, that it could only be used as something. So just for you all to know.
So you came down on the side of owner-occupied or no?
We said that either the owner had to live in one or the other if they were using it as a short-term rental. So that way it wasn't like a house and an ADU on one property being used as a short-term rental.
That is totally consistent with the other jurisdictions.
And that was all. And we did specify specifically at some point, and other people in the group should say if I'm saying this wrong, but... you could either have an owner or a property manager, because people believe if you had a property manager that lived on site in one or the other, it was a contribution to the community and that you were creating a job for somebody. But somebody was on site, you know, so...
You're responsible.
Yeah, so let's say Pete had a house and an accessory dwelling unit, but he didn't live here, and he employed me to live in one, and that was my job, and they then took care of his short-term rental, that we felt... that that was an okay situation if the owner was not present. Does that make sense?
There's a number of ways to do it. I mean, Cottonwood, the owner of record on the tax rolls has to occupy one or the other.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that that's just what they have sort of decided. I mean, if you do it the other way too, just as easily.
Yeah, and in our short-term rental section, we did talk about that the property, it has to be the owner's primary residence based on state regulations, taxes, etc. That it couldn't be, you know, someone that lived elsewhere could buy up a bunch. Well, we did a whole section just on short-term rentals that were our ideas of what we thought, not necessarily saying an ADU.
Well, it can't be the owner's primary residence to go live with, by definition, in the county.
I agree. I'm just telling you about what we talked about in our group.
Well, I'm good for you. So,
what?
So was the idea to try and target the housing for employee housing and locals?
Yeah, I think, and I mean, us discussing short-term rentals was an add-on at the very end, because at first we said we don't want to go there at all because our focus is housing, and it kept overlapping so much. And we decided that we should at least put some opinions. And some things that got written down, not everyone agreed with everyone, but we felt like it was a representation of our discussion. And the way our group said it was, these are the things that we wanted to pass along to the Planning Commission to continue. Does that make sense? Did I not answer your question? Did I answer your question, Mark?
Yeah, that's one of the things I kind of noticed is what it's evolved was, you know, there was a lot of discussion about the problems with more housing for seasonal employees and low-income housing. Right? And then kind of in the middle of all this is when this Airbnb thing kind of hit, which kind of like muddied the waters quite a bit. And I think it was probably kind of good that it hit when it did, because I think one of the things it brings up is, you know, if you have an accessory dwelling unit, how to keep from having two Airbnbs on the same property, and then, you know, that's kind of doubles the problems involved with the whole idea of the Airbnb. So that sounds like, is that kind of what happened?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that was what we were talking about, because people went back and forth that, you know, somebody that can own property might also want to have an accessory dwelling unit or rooms within their home. We talked specifically in that section, the three different options of renting a whole house on someone's property, renting a room out of your home, and renting a separate unit, whether it's attached or detached, just three separate things. And as a group, we decided that we didn't feel that if somebody wanted to use their own property to make money when it's not a lot of opportunity to have jobs, and the existing short-term rentals provide employment for other people. It's not just for the owners, because there are people that are cleaning other homes, and so it supports the economy in other ways. And so we didn't want to just say, no, we don't. We want people to have that option. Obviously, the focus of our group was to support long-term housing for seasonal workers, year-round employees that don't own something, you know, year-round residents that don't own, and so on and so forth. But we felt that we should address short-term rentals, and we saw it as a group, we supported short-term rentals, mm-hmm. but we felt like they needed to be discussed more, and that we saw a benefit both. Well, just
let me clarify while it's fresh. Well, you just said it. Let me clarify 2 points.
Yeah.
Whenever I say let me clarify 2 points, by the time I get through the first one, I'll have forgotten. the reason that these towns all put in, that I've researched, that the owner must occupy one or the other is because if you don't do that, and the owner doesn't live there, and they hire you, you live there, and part of your rental, but your payment, their payment, you're starting now to get into an R2 zone, mm-hmm. and you're starting to defeat the philosophical idea behind this extra relative to solve housing. You see, we're keeping all of this in single family zone.
And that was what we learned too, and the one that we used a lot as an example was Provo Orem, and it was that, you know, so both houses didn't turn into college housing. That one of the, and there's specifically that one of the residents, one of the homes has to be, I want to say even a specific that said that you had to have somebody that was married. You couldn't have people living together that weren't married to prevent housing of lots of college students. You know, it was a very specific.
Glad you said that. Remind me of point number two.
But that one was, you know, we used that as an example locally. And the other one that we used a lot was New Hampshire, although it didn't apply to us. There was a lot of ordinances in New Hampshire, and they became state ordinances. And I believe it was Becky Crystal was the one that did. We kind of divided up who did research and kind of presented things. But the two that she brought that we all then used as our examples for discussion was the Provo Orem area and New Hampshire.
The other point to get a little more clarification on is roommates. You have some legal problems if you start lumping that in, because if anybody here who's a single person has a spare room and they want to have a roommate, you really can't, for a whole bunch of reasons. I mean, even the definition of single family now universally has to include people who are not related, to people that just live together, or LGBT issues, or whatever. So when you get into roommates, you kind of need to keep that in its own deal. You need to keep R2, R4 zoning in its own deal, and then you need to keep the ADUs where it's playing in its own deal. Otherwise, the whole thing will get real muddy really fast.
And I believe that that was why our group tried to do kind of five key things, but we realized some of them overlap, so we just referenced each of them in within the report.
Let me ask you, because I think most of you, all of you, were here when the ADU thing came up. This is before I joined planning, but when it came up under the, when Locke and Elisa and Bill Muse were here, and that, I remember coming to the public hearing and it got slaughtered. Were there real differences between that and what you're talking about, or was it something else that knocked it out? I mean, I didn't know enough of town issues or anything.
We didn't knock out ADUs ever. We always felt that was one of our original 4 points that we felt was important. The one that we kind of let go of and then re-brought in was short-term rentals. Mm. I don't know if I can answer that question as well as other people maybe, but I know I learned something when Curtis said it. I wouldn't have known that if an accessory, what we thought of as an accessory dwelling unit was only used not as a business exchange, whether short-term or long-term rental, that's what qualified it. I never knew that until just this evening.
Yeah, I didn't know
that. I thought that, you know, anything you had, whether you rented it or not, was considered an accessory dwelling unit, whether it was attached or detached. And that was obviously incorrect.
There's nothing in our ordinance that prevents a guest house, attached, detached, in the basement, whatever.
Because I think that's driven
a
lot of the questions about compliance and non-compliance is we're talking about things that maybe don't even fall under the category of an ADU. We're calling everything an ADU. Uh-huh. And so then once the town defines what it wants an ADU to be, then things that aren't ADUs, do we need to then define them? Or are they just, as long as they're not being used commercially, are they then?
Right, I mean, you've got a home and you want to build a guest house. I mean, what we have in our table of uses is lot coverage percentage, setbacks. Now there's some other factors in there, but there's nothing. It says you can't build a garage, a shop, a place for the kids to come home.
Now, we did discuss that. One of our says is recognize and address the current non-compliant ADUs in the community. And as a group, we thought those were both rentals and non-rentals. And we said gave three options, you know, that either grandfather as is, make them come into full compliance of whatever is resolved at the end of your, and or look at each situation and work with them individually.
But I mean, that was the thing that's been going on forever with this idea that everything in town is out of compliance.
Yeah, that's what I but that's what our whole group thought.
That's, I mean, I have. I
well, there are jurisdictions. You can find jurisdictions that would have, especially in small lots. We're not going to let you build a mother-in-law even in the backyard. We might let you go in the basement. You know, but they're real small lots. They're much bigger cities, whatever. And they have different region parking is always an issue, et cetera, et cetera. But in my reading of the ordinance so far, and I have to admit, I'm still pulling threads out of this thing, trying to tie pieces from phase 21 together with pages 46. And so, but my reading right now is we don't have anything that would prevent that. The thing that would prevent the building of a rental unit there would be the zoning, because it's single family zoning. And so that's what we'd be trying to do, is say, we want to expand the definition of single-family zoning, at least in these zones, or these districts, however you decide to do it, to include this accessory unit without changing single-family zoning. So we're not rezoning it R2, whatever. That's kind of the whole point of it, is not to rezone, but to encourage these 1,000-foot rentals
think there's been an assumption that may or may not be true, that you couldn't really build, you could build a shop, but you couldn't build a building with a kitchen that was a separate building, and was, there was some, for some reason, it was prohibited by the ordinances, and I,
I've been trying to look, because I've heard that, I even heard that, well, you can do something that's connected by a roof between the two. Somebody told me that, I'm like, I did the global search in here for roof and for connected, and I've come up with nothing so far, so, but I'm still new to this, so.
That's strictly in some of the building ordinances that you see in a lot of cities, because they're trying to control the form and all of that stuff. It's not a zoning.
So because, you know, the idea was one house on a lot. And a shop doesn't count as a house, but a building with a kitchen would.
Well, I can tell you one of those instances happened was over here with these two trailers over on us. The property one of the Muslims is they put two trailers on a Muslim property across the street by the church.
Okay.
Because they put two trailers on there and they were told, well, you can't do that because you can only put one trailer on there. And then and they said, well, we want to put two trailers. Well, yeah, actually, when I did put two trailers on there. And so then they, I think it was a town board, the planning commission said, well, I guess if you, you know, if you connected them, then we could consider it as being one club.
Yeah, well, that's what they did. And maybe that's
how it got resolved, you know. And so it's kind of a Procustian bed kind of a situation.
Yeah.
You know, we have a lot of those where, you know, instead of making the bed bigger, is chopped up legs.
Well, what the ordinance actually says is if you pull a trailer on and somebody else occupies it as an additional dwelling unit, you're supposed to get a 90-day permit from Judy, and that's it, 90 days out of the year.
But this predates that.
That's true.
So, Curtis, you're saying in a single, in the way you're reading the existing single-family ordinance, you can build a guest house. You could build something with a separate kitchen, or you could, whatever it is, like I said, a side or a trailer qualifies for that, or a yurt, or all those things. But you could build that, but if it's occupied by a different family, then we gonna have to come up with a definition that.
That's where ADU comes in. There's a commercial relationship.
Or if it's only if it's rented, basically.
It's single family, and frankly, almost all jurisdictions have a definition of single family, and ours is like not that long, and it just, you know. Yeah. Like Garfield County's definition of single family is so many or more people related. Let's see, people related by blood, down through cousins, you know, or by marriage, or three additional unrelated people. In Provo, it's two additional unrelated people. It's only county.
We could all live together.
Right. So, you know, they go through the whole drill. But it's a living unit, and a cooking together unit, and a unit in the, you know, sharing the kitchen, doing all of this. And that arises because of, you know, certain civil rights things, and, you know, where the marriage test is no longer, you know, of unmarried couples live together, LGBT, like I said. And so you can't discriminate. And so this, the definition of single, but our definition of single family is kind of one thing is in a dwelling, one is in single, and it doesn't define it really. So the about the best you can come up with that I come up with so far is that a single family doesn't put any restriction on it, and in the dwelling of it, you can do that. And then there's nothing that I see that would prevent you from building a guest house. There is a provision in the ordinance that anything not authorized by this ordinance is prohibited, but it doesn't say a second, you know, with a kitchen. It is, you know, one way or another. It's just.
When does it become two units? Losing marks.
Okay, so I like it. There was another part to this was that the water company would, they with the water company, said that if you sell another structure, that they recognized that they said that they considered that a separate structure that would require a separate water permit. And then they decided they would have to have separate power meters.
Yeah.
And so this is where the separation started happening, as to where, you know, another structure was considered a separate unit, a separate water, separate power, and so then you basically you double the density. You know, you have, say, a single, you have a double, you know, instead of considering a single with a separate house, because the water company said if you're going to build a guest house or any kind of separate house, they had to have water, then you're going to have to buy another hookup because they said that's a separate. So that's one of the complications that we probably didn't think about.
Right. And so really the bottom line of all of this is we need to define our terms. We need to decide what wants to happen, what comes out of all of this. And then the Planning Commission may have discussion in the meetings, and it would be very easy to craft the right ordinance to define, well, what is an ADU, what is qualifies, and how does it work. And then on the other side of that, you know, we'll make it more clear about a second unit with a kitchen in it so that, you know, you can have the guest house. But make that clear rather than these suppositions that we have to get into and, you know, lack of clarity.
Carla, you asked about what happened before with that previous report.
Yeah. And why?
The parts that I remember about that, I wasn't in on all of that because I wasn't here all the time. But was that it wasn't, there were so many people kept bringing up, well, what happens if it's, it wasn't well defined in a way what that unit really was, the way I understood.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the objections came from people who were envisioning all kinds of things that maybe it wasn't intended to be. But
well, I mean, kind of a funny story, and I heard the story about a couple Planning Commission members back then, drove around town, and everybody who added a room on the garage or a this or a that, you know, regardless of how it was being used, said, well, that's, you know, that's this, and that's violating the zoning, and therefore, and they said, well, we're not doing that. And they said, but you could. Yeah, it was like, you know, it was the old intent thing. So it's kind of like, okay, let's just start from ground zero. What do you want to do? Make sense of it, and then we can. It's pretty easy to craft the correct ordinance that would clear it up that you can submit to the town council or the planning commission to the town council.
It does put into context the, or at least for me, the, you know, sitting in meetings and hearing, you know, but it could be this or it could be that, and then the response is always, but that's not what it's supposed to be. But if it doesn't clearly say it, and we have so many things that exist because, or seem to me to exist because, well, this was, it's like this thing with the bridging between buildings. It was accepted and therefore it becomes a policy when it actually wasn't. It was just trying, you know, like trying to help somebody out, and then you're building on those decisions that are just not based in anything.
Well,
you know, so
it came out of a matter of interpretation, you know.
And then you're
somebody didn't want to, you know, push the issue. They, mm-hmm. you know, they said, I'm sure you've all heard this before. Depends on how you interpret it.
Right.
You know? And so that's part of it. That's one of the problems with the whole weapon issue as well.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on how you, you know, how it's interpreted.
And if the decision wasn't really based in something very straightforward and clear, that was an interpretation that was based on something that wasn't actual. So we have a lot of unwinding to do. But I think, you know, what you had said a moment ago is what definition does the town want of ADU and how it to be used, and then craft an ordinance that is clear and direct.
That's actually the best way to approach any of these problems is to, it's really hard to get your head around it all until you say, oh, here's a draft of an ordinance. And we've taken all the input, here it is, here's the definitions in it, here's, you know, requires this, requires that, da-da-da-da. Then you put it before them, oh, okay, so if we do this, that's exactly what we're doing. It's very, very well defined. And then we can, you know, move on. And in the meantime, as part of that, you can say what it's not. Well, somebody added a twister bedroom onto the garage so that the kid could sleep when they came there. And you say, well, it's not that. So that, and then that gives a lot of clarity to that. So then we're kind of through that, and now we have a much better idea of what, you know, and people have probably have a better idea of what they can do in single family zones.
They can also stop being pointed out. more questions on that. I want to stay within this because I have, but before, go on to RV park.
I can make one clarifying thing on the short-term rental, and that I stated that I don't think I stated clearly, at least for the people that were saying it. Going to that it has to be your primary residence, but you can still rent it out. If you owned a second home somewhere else that you were traveling to while you were gone, you could rent it. If you claimed that place as your primary. And the other example was somebody like, I'll just use myself for example, not that I've ever done this or thought about it, but, you know, if I went back east to visit my family for 2 weeks, the 2 weeks I was gone to support my finances to go, I could rent my own house out as an Airbnb, and people have been doing that, and that was what was brought up, just so when, so why, how you could do both. Does that make sense more now? When I stated that people said, you could have a short-term rental if it was your primary residence, and then it was like, well, you can't do both, but those were the examples that our group discussed of people that do that. So if I wanted to go back east, you know, to kind of make that balance and pay for my own trip the 2 weeks I was gone, I could have somebody rent my house as a short-term rental for the 2 weeks and be responsible, you know. And that was what people in the group talked about that they would like as an option.
So the point of that is to avoid just having people buy up homes.
Yes, and that was people that was like, I couldn't come in and buy seven homes in Boulder and make them all short-term rentals, but I could make the one that I was using as my primary residence that I was claiming on my taxes. Mm-hmm. Does that clarify
that? I think I understand.
Because I don't know if it's written very well in here as well, and I can go back in and kind of add a bit to make that. But that was my interpretation of the people that brought it up in my group. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something I had thought of, but
Yeah.
That
means
that what you got out of it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I know my cousin did it. He and his wife traveled.
Yeah.
And they live in Colorado, and they were gone for a month. Mm-hmm. They had a friend do it, and they did all these short term, and it allowed them to financially be able to go somewhere.
To do all that. Because then, Curtis, does that go to the homeowner's right to their property to do that?
Once again, that's now we're in another bucket.
Yeah. You know, I mean, those were all the ones that we said.
That's a different bucket.
Yeah.
And there's no reason that they, and they always do the cross, there's crossover, but now transient rentals, that's a discussion of its own, and that can, once again, it's a policy thing. It is shaped by how the will of the majority wants to do it, and then the discussion here, and then with that you blend a state statute and state law. And so it just depends on, I mean, you could say, well, yeah, you can do it if you're the owner of record of the home.
Yeah.
You can do it, I think in Utah, you probably just, I think it would be problematic if somebody brought a lawsuit if you tried to restrict it below, you know, above 30 days, like Springfield's doing 90 days. So for 30 days, but then as a policy matter, what you're saying is, well, we don't need the 30-day thing. What we need is if I'm the owner of record and I want to rent my house out and I occupy it, that's my full-time residence and it's my primary residence in the Garfield County records, then when I'm not here, even if it's for a week, a lot of people do this now, even for a week, I want to be able to, I know I'm going, and I want to rent it out.
Yeah.
And so, that's, once again, it's just a policy decision. Once you kind of get your policy, then it's pretty straightforward to draft an ordinance that tries to reflect that policy. Then that gets hashed through, and then it goes up the line. You know, so that's kind of the best way to talk about it in terms of getting down to it. You know, here's the thou shalts and the thou shalt nots. You know, so that, like you're saying, you don't want people coming in buying seven of them. And so fine, but you want the property owner to help pay their taxes and insurance, for that matter.
And that was just, those were the ideas that were discussed. Mm-hmm. We had one whole night, that's all we did was talk about short-term rentals, and these all were things that came up.
Yeah.
Well, and I thought it was that the economic side of it was very interesting that came out, because that was the whole, that it is an opportunity to make income in a place where it's difficult. And then did it also provide the kind of rental that is, oh, it's still in the character of the town, as opposed to, if you have a few of those, maybe you don't get the Motel 8 franchise building.
Yeah, so we discussed all those things.
Yeah. Did you come to a consensus that can be reduced to writing, and so that it would be possible maybe start crafting a draft? I might be premature, but...
We talked about if we should go that far. We decided we started moving that way, then we went back to saying, let's just give bullet point considerations or ideas. And even some of them was like, as if it was things that we suggest to you all to research.
I'm not saying you should do the draft.
No, but...
You give the policy points.
Yeah.
Here's our consensus on policy. Then,
and that's what we did for each of
mine and McKiff's role to start working it into a form. Come back to you, say, does this reflect the policy?
Yeah.
And you say, you take it back to your group, you get the consensus. Then you say, well, we want to change these things, and then you bring it to the planning commission and say,
yeah, and that would be great.
Yeah, that's the way the process worked.
And that's where we did, we were able to come up with things, you know, whether it was for what we were calling ADUs, which I now believe is incorrect, but for lack of a different word, I'm going to stick with it for tonight. You know, whether it was that, or short-term rentals, or clustering, or RV parks, all of those things, we gave things that we thought this first go-around should be considerations. And that is how we, you know, just stated it in the very beginning was that the below outlined areas were things that we felt that the Planning Commission should use in their discussions that we believe that relate to current ordinances that needed to be reevaluated or tweaked and possibly ordinances that need to be created. And then we went through and outlined it. In addition, we said there were three other things that we didn't feel like were our five main points that we thought should continue to get looked into as future possibilities that could support the town.
Let me ask you, with the RV park, I love all the ideas in there, bunk houses, tiny houses, tent sites, I mean, ways of accommodating all different forms of camping. And I know, you know that one over in Escalante on the far end of town, that one is just everything. In that main lodge down below, she's got that shared kitchen and all of those things. Were you thinking of, I mean, what in your group, were you thinking of having it be a zone or having it, I mean, because we haven't really done zones, but how were you thinking of that? You know, because my concern, as you know from meetings, is that right now it's conditional use everywhere in town. And so, you know, how to get it, you know, how to get that out, whether we go to the step of creating a zone, which isn't simple, or, you know, where does it belong, which is also not simple, because it's based on, well, why wouldn't you put it here, and why would you put it there? But what were your thoughts when you were working on that?
Well, for a while.
When we were I think there were some of us that talked about zoning, and they have to be zoned for it, and there were others that just said it could all go conditional use. But I think, aren't we trying to move away from
conditional use is zoning?
If you say it's conditional use, it's a use in a zone, right? If it's conditional in a zone, it's a use in a zone. And it's really, but the conditional part is just remove conditional from your mind when you talk about conditional use. Because if you don't have those sometimes, and it's not what that was zoned for, and you're asking for a variance,
that was what it was intended, but that's not the way the law reads now.
The law or the ordinance?
The law, the state law.
Oh, okay.
The state law changed since the first ordinance was on conditional use permits was written. We thought, and they thought at the time, that was a better way to control it, was to have conditional use permits. But when the state law changed, basically, if it's a conditional use, it's allowed conditional use within a zone, it's up to the town to say, oh, it doesn't, there's some standards, there's some very specific reasons why we can't allow this particular conditional use. And it's not an easy standard for the town. If you say, you know, I want an RV park, we have to give you a conditional use permit if there's unless you are violating something that's addressed specifically in the ordinance, then we have to keep it.
And what we saw too is that a lot of our definitions of things that fall within conditional use permits are very vague or very
right.
Simple. And so then, as a planning commission, you're in the position of having to say yes. And so it's, do we move them out of conditional use and create a separate zone where this is a permitted, we've used the Boss property as an example in the past. So let's just say that belongs to the town and that's leisure zone. And so it's permitted up there. It's not coming and getting a conditional use. If you have that land, you can put it there. That's one way of approaching it. And I guess, sort of maybe in the shorter term is to say, if we can't get that far, is to say, well, it's conditional, the conditions would include, access off of Highway 12. So that takes it out of Lower Boulder, out of the residential areas, would have to, put in more conditions so that it could be granted in these residential areas. And maybe that, I think that that is more of a transitional step to actually having a zone with permitted uses, but, I could be looking at that.
We talked about zones very briefly and said none of us knew enough about them to feel like we could go into it, nor did any of us feel like it was a priority for us to research.
Yeah.
And instead we just said things that we thought should be considered.
Mm-hmm.
And we did reference in that some current Boulder zoning ordinances and sections in the Boulder Town General Plan from 2013. But no, we did not discuss zoning specifically.
Well, I don't think we have either up here other than in the most general of ways, and it's, to me, it always seems as though we're trying to figure out, kind of the chicken and the egg. Which do you do first to get a handle on the thing? Do you want to talk about your conversation on multi-unit dwellings? You don't have to.
Sure.
It's interesting to me how you kind of came about it.
Well, we were looking at how to create high-density housing without creating high-density buildings, And so the thing that we discussed was what our suggestion as a group was the maximum of 4 units per lot. We said that we believed that it needed to be researched to set a square footage limit and a height limit for the total for the whole building, not per unit, to research available incentives for long-term rentals, as well as the ability to create an ordinance that would allow a maximum number of units available as short-term rentals. So if you had 4 units, that what percentage of those 4 could be short-term versus long-term? Because as our goal was to create long-term housing availability. We would like to encourage the design to look like a single family. We gave a couple pictures and discussed different things, and people talked about having, you know, one main door that you entered in. When you went in, there was a door on either side and then a staircase, you know, to access it. So it was one, or the image that we provided was, you know, not just a row of, so it didn't look like a condo, you know. So we just talked about just, and it was something that we thought could be an option to solve housing shortages if somebody were wanting or willing to build it.
And yeah.
It was, I mean, and that's what we kept coming to. We had these really great ideas, but when it comes down to it, ultimately it's up to the property owner what they want to do with it. And so one of our suggestions in this, as well as other, is our suggestion is that the Planning Commission be able to provide visual examples and support these ideas so that they're an attainable option for people when they're thinking about developing, whether they were images on your all's website or it was created a brochure that said, oh, if you're doing it, these are pictures, whether they were drawings or pictures of other places. That, and we did that for our suggestion in different areas to you all.
Yeah.
Was for people to really understand it, having both visual and text to support, oh, I could do this.
Yeah. We do have resources with Rural Planning Group and then all their people.
Right. When you start talking about this, then now you get squarely into zoning, and that's, I mean, that's, it's not a bad thing to get into. I mean, we could certainly use, I think there's probably some state law. I'm not going to run limits say there is for sure, but I think there's some stuff that says, as with the general plan, you're supposed to look at your zoning map every so often and see if it's meeting the needs, the current needs of the town. And if what you say is we need more rental housing, then we should probably be looking at, you know, where that would be appropriate and then zoning for it. Because now you're into the, what they call the R1 is your single family, R2 is duplex, R3 is triplex, et cetera. And the line. And just, we don't, I don't think we should be, I don't know how the town council is going to feel about any of this really, but let me just add 1 minute on zoning versus conditional use, because, you know, Peter's right. Conditional use is a form of zoning, but it's a spot zoning. And so what happens, it's a zoning that is determined for you by the applicant in large part. Because they come in and they say, well, your ordinance says that any 5-acre parcel or larger qualifies for an RV park under certain conditions and engineering, et cetera, et cetera. And so if the town feels it's not the best interest of the town to have that land anywhere on any 5 acres in town, or to scatter out a bunch of them and want to consolidate it, then this is where zoning is a much more safe route. Because then, if the political will exist to say, well, we feel that it could exist in these areas where there's screening, topographical screening, and you've got to have the public policy arguments for town identity and safety and all of this, but we feel that it is not in our, doesn't meet our general plan and our town identity in these areas of, say, generally speaking, high visibility neighborhoods where you got to do right turns for 40-foot, you know, motorhomes and stuff like that. So zoning is the way to do it if the political exists. Conditional use is the way it is right now, and if there's not a, if zoning is too heavy to lift, you could look at the conditional use language, and you could try to strengthen those definitions to push it into these better screened areas. But what you have to then understand to deal with is you really get on a slippery slope with the Moab case, the recent Moab case, because what they're saying is if you're going to deny a conditional use, you have to have your findings of facts line up with your conclusions of law, and you have to, they all have to be supportable. Otherwise, they're arbitrary, capricious, we will strike them down. And so you can't just say, whoa, it'd be really bad to have 40-foot motorhomes going down a lower older road and trying to take those turns, that narrow road, et cetera. You'd be much better off to hire a traffic engineer and have a study done. So that there's your findings and facts, and then your conclusion of law or your public safety requirements. So it's you, well, either way, you know, one zoning is the way you can kind of do it, settle it. The other way is sort of an ongoing, you know, hard to deny unless you really do your work.
Yeah.
That's what you. A lot of that work has to be in the ordinance already. So
exactly.
There have to be words in the ordinance that support your decision.
That's your conclusions of law.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's where you got to be complaints back, and you got to line it up with the ordinance. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
And so if you got a two-line definition on a conditional use in here, you just basically you forget it.
I do want to hear from land use people. So, I mean, are there any more on housing? Because I'm also mindful of everybody's time. But I'd really like to hear what land use has
really
come up
fast.
With. No, I mean, I'm happy.
I know. Extended the time. I just wanted to say I thought it was very interesting what housing came up with as far as having examples. We discussed how there are a few owners of large tracts of land around here. And a lot of those people are farming it or at cattle or whatever, and they see an end that doesn't include necessarily their family taking over and keeping the cattle there and all that other stuff. So we had thought perhaps there could be a brochure, something, online is okay, but I think it would be really neat to be able to address those specific tracts of land. I know that sounds kind of weird, but anyway, this is just what we talked about. Mm. And just be able to show different scenarios as far as clustering and as far as what were some of the other things that we came up with? Wow, it just shot out of my mind. Anyway, tax ways to save on exactly something. But just something, and even if those people look at it and go, you know, at least they can look at something and go, well, that's nothing I'm interested in or whatever, but there is something there that might be helpful. And it's so important for Boulder to keep some nice open areas. And so we talked about that as an aid. To these larger landowners. And also we talked about the Sitla land that's within Boulder city limits, and it kind of jarred us as far as like hearing about Tikapu and all that down there happening, and you just go, wow, well, Sitla is Sitla, you know, but okay, and then just another quick dogleg here in my thinking. We also talked about, and I hate to use this term, but an annexation plan. And it's not a plan to annex anything. It's just to say to the county, like say, okay, say the Burr Trail is kind of, in your wildest imagination, we have become a gateway to a national park. And the Burr Trail is so beautiful the way it is. If we could somehow, with an annexation plan, show the county, which is all we need, it doesn't require a plan, it's just to say, this is going to impact our town, even though it might not be in the city limits, but say if mining, if gravel trucks are going through here all the time or whatever, it's going to make a difference. So that's a way that we've been told that you get a place at the table at least to kind of plead your case. Otherwise, if the county starts where it starts, it isn't as if that area doesn't impact Boulder. So that was another thing that we wanted to get into, but it's such a huge thing to tackle. Yeah. And like with zoning for commercial, like RV parks and things like that, it seems like we did talk a little bit about, of course, you know, north of town or wherever that they could get tucked away and not be a huge impact on like residential neighborhoods. And I can't come up with anything right now more than that, but Peg could.
Let me ask you before we go to Peg, were any of those large landowners in that just on your, because I can't remember who's on
yes,
the group.
Yes, Del was there.
And Kelly. What were their comments on that?
It seemed to him like that would be great information to have. Whether or not, you know, he would use it or the gardeners would use it or whoever. But there, you can't ignore the fact that they, if they want it,
they can make a huge difference.
Oh, yeah. And it would be better to at least have something that they can look at and show them tax advantages or whatever, you know. Anyway.
Well, do you think that through this process of actually sitting and talking to each other that they would be receptive? I mean, not just like, yeah, go ahead and do a brochure, but they would actually would sit down, that you could actually then go to the next stage of sitting down and having those discussions about, okay, let's talk about the tax advantages, let's...
I think that would be way far off in the distance. I think the main thing is to just give them something to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are going to be inheritance, and there are going to be things that they haven't probably thought about. And I think it's such a private matter what they do with their own land.
Yeah.
But whatever you can do to help them in their discussion with their siblings or whoever, you know, I think it would be worth the time.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's feasible or not.
Well, on our land use committee, we started off, Rick Gardner was on our committee, and and so the big thing with Ray right up front is that he didn't feel like the ranchers and farmers were loved, and one, you know, in the greater sense that we weren't appreciated in the town, and I agree with him there, and that, you know, so that was problematic for them. They didn't see really staying in the ranching business without support from the community, and especially with the diverse community that's changing all the time, that doesn't include farmers and ranchers. They need to build support from them. And so, actually, the committee showed quite a bit of support, and our committee decided to, you know, fully endorse the ranchers and farming and agriculture in the town in general, and even when we went further than that is to endorse public lands grazing on our committee. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought that was a big step because after we all agreed to that.
Yeah.
Ray was really more receptive to most of the discussion after that. You know, and so I think that is a big issue for agriculture and the community is the fact that they feel that.
That's really interesting. Was the committee able to establish some kind of policy bullet points that they said, this is what we feel?
Well, just being as that we all agreed, you know, there was consensus that we all supported, and, you know, diversity on our committee, that we all supported agriculture, you know, that was important.
Right.
And I'm not talking about we, because I am in agriculture, but I'm talking about the Vermont agriculture.
Right.
Because Denise is on there, and Matt Cochran, and everybody, and that was to my surprise, there was really no kick, there was no pushback. Well, if you do it right, you know, that's what I expect to hear, that's what I hear all the time. So, well, we'll support agriculture if you do it right. But, no, there was just a general consensus in our committee from everybody that, hey, you know, no, we support you guys. We understand that you're important to keeping the values that the whole community supports, and that you're really subsidizing those in a lot of ways, and that we appreciate you. And he said, well, what about water plants? And everybody said they
public land grazing?
Public land
grazing. Grazing.
Yeah, and so that was a big surprise, you know, to me. And
did they come up with actual things that the town could do?
That's what is my recommendations for. We're not speaking to the town.
No,
so
but
we're saying, as far as we're concerned on the committee, everybody was in agreement that it was important that agriculture in the community and agriculture was dependent, you know, on public lands use to support the agriculture in the community was important. And I got to tell you that after everybody showed support for that Ray's attitude was a lot. Of you know, staying in agriculture, keeping staying in agriculture.
Right.
Yeah, it was very.
Well, what we came across that same thing because we had Kelly Groundy and Dell, and they definitely felt very strongly that the town kind of didn't support them. And so, but our question was, what is it that we can do? You know, like, what can we do?
One idea that we could do is we're due for a revision of the general plan, and the opening of the general plan is in bold lettering, very clear. Rural heritage, agriculture, open green fields, water on fields. I mean, everybody that I know, the first time they drove in Boulder, anybody fell in love with Boulder, it was because of those green fields with white sandstone features coming into them. And everybody I know loves that aspect and does not want to see 5-acre slice and dice tumbleweed patches keep going under. So I think almost everybody in town is absolutely on board with agriculture, but maybe what we need to do is get your pamphlet here and state it. In addition to clustering, state that, cite the general plan.
Make sure
that the support is felt.
In a way.
Right now the ordinances kind of don't really support, I mean, there's a map with some kind of clustering and some density bonus, but there's a path to having agriculture, you're basically having your cake eat it too, where, okay, you're going to dedicate some land to agriculture, you're going to carve off some for residential, it's a little dense, and that's that corner that basically you're dedicating this to agriculture. This is going to have, you're going to sell it off, you're going to develop it, it costs more to develop, but it's going to be worth more when you're done. And then agriculture, the land won't be so expensive. That's part of the problem, is that the land becomes so expensive. It's development land now. All that agriculture land, the prices are development prices. You couldn't buy it, farm it.
Speaking of somebody who's involved in this, and know, I've heard before, you know, well, the carpenters, you know, after, you know, Barbara died, then they're going to sell out. But, you know, this is not the attitude I heard from Kevin or Ray Good. But they want to feel like that there's a future there, and it's a future that the town supports. And then I've also heard the other ideas about perimeter development, and, you know, using ranchers, using their maybe their not best space and selling that, you know. But, you know, I've talked to all the ranchers about this. All ranchers and farmers realize that once you start doing that, that's the end.
Well, it's already,
you start.
It's already happening.
Well,
the prices are already to reflect that.
That may be a reality, but when you start doing that, you know,
yeah.
That's what people start doing, then, you know, you can just figure what the result is going to be there. And I remember Kathy Bagley, 30, 40 years ago, she was pushing this all about these old farmers and never had anything. They can sell off all their bad land. And we got some of these ranches that are like perimeter development, they're like golf courses. They got a little ranch in the middle. Well, I can tell you right now, from experience, I don't want to be out there ranching with a bunch of people in houses around there. Oh yes, look, there's where I'm going. Water. Oh gosh, how do you think of doing that?
You'll be on everyone's Instagram feed.
That's so funny. Oh yes, become a reality TV show, right?
But
it is funny, and I even laugh at it sometimes. But the thing is that, you know, to keep ranches and agriculture intact.
Yeah.
And try and like their and try to stay away from those.
Yeah. Absolutely. Otherwise, I mean, the whole town turns into tumbleweed patch. Mm-hmm.
But if you start talking about, oh, we need to have a 20-acre, 40-acre minimum for ranch land, then the ranchers get upset because, well, that's my out. That's my retirement.
Yeah,
well, so everybody likes to develop it. Everybody likes to own insurance, right?
Right. So this is a good way to advocate. It's like, if you want to develop it, then you can do this. If you know, otherwise, that's your path, basically, if you want
to
develop it.
But just to be able to present options,
yeah.
And with no strings attached, not telling anybody what to do with their land, just go, you know what, this is, we really want you guys to be able to prosper some way. Here are some options.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea.
Do you?
Yeah, I've always thought that, even with just like the people that are coming in, like Daniel Kennedy, so I wish that he would be able to be presented with some ideas ahead of time before it all got dropped. I like the fact that he wants 6 acres instead of 5 acres, because there is a potential to, you know, kind of make that work agriculturally now and still keep that green belt. But I think he could have even done better. And some of the other structures, like, you know, some of these structures that end up on hills that are like 2 or 3 stories high, you know, on top of it already. It's like, you know, maybe somebody could sit up or they could look and say, well, you know, we'd like to try and maintain our view sheds, and you know, we already have great views around here. Maybe, you know, 1-story structures are better than 2-story structures, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't think anybody wants to find people to do it. We can't. But if you present some ideas and even some pictures, you know, this idea of like taking the landscape and then having, you know, being able to use computers to project the various, you know, type structures.
Oh, yeah. This will be obtrusive. This is unobtrusive.
Right. And which looks better, you know, which looks better. I think that's a great idea.
I would really love to see that.
But the town needs to change the ordinances to support that.
Well, I don't think that's an ordinance. That's just a policy decision.
Right now, that's like you're if you want to develop your ranch, you have 40 acres. You want to do a real estate deal, then, you know, it's much easier for you. We'll just do 6-acre lots. Just chop it up. We'll have, you know, I don't care how many fields or not.
But as a starting point, to be able to present that person with the visuals,
right.
And with
but
really
still,
a,
the path for that.
But then that,
that
right, then that has to come
there
too. But to be able to at least say, you know, show to somebody these are the things that the town values, and we're going to get our ordinances in shape.
Yeah.
But to have those, to be able to present options, so that, you know, as you say, that so that at least there are discussion points that some of those landowners can take home and say, well, okay, now that no one else is listening to us, let's talk about, you know, these tax benefits that are in here, or this clustering thing that's in here. But you're right, you know, we have to get the ordinances, and that's part of what this...
And there are counties that want, that very specifically want to preserve agriculture, mm-hmm. that have done these kind of incentives. If you go through the alternate land use, then you know, that you got to preserve that irrigated field, then on the other part you'll get three more units.
Right.
Something
like
that.
Oh, well, you're just got clustering.
But actually an incentive in it. So
incentives are great. I think what Cookie was talking about was just, you know, something that's not codified, just you know, when somebody comes and says, you know, just look this over. You know, because like as soon as if you start trying to codify that sort of thing, then especially with farmers and ranchers, then they feel like that they're, you know, you're trying to tell them to do
some kind of, you know, if you wanted to do your own development that was kind of had some clusters and said, oh, well, I need a little more density at this end so that I can, you know, separate my
But now, see, then you're getting into what I watched Kathy and I did do over there 30 years ago, which is going to the farmer and saying, hey, you know, Joe Blow, you know, you've been suffering all these years. If you could just cut these PJs out over here on the side of your farm and this little rocky hill over this side and let me list them. Sell them, mm-hmm. you know, you can make some money and stay in farming too. Well, some of those things, once they're not farming anymore.
Right. Well, the way to do that is, you get to do that, but you have to dedicate the farmland to farming. You have to do a conservation easement or something like that.
I came up with two more things that I'll just say really quick, just about. Take your time. No, because this is going on and on. But the one thing that came up that some of our group felt really strongly about is they wanted there to be some kind of reconciled thing with all the places that are out of compliance.
Non-conforming uses.
Either get busy and say from this day on, you're going to have to bring your stuff up to code. From this date past, we'll grandfather you in. And there were dates thrown around about that. And now I've forgotten what the second thing is.
I always forget the second thing. I never get a number on it.
Well, it was about everybody, I think the one thing everybody agreed on was we want things that are currently in the ordinance that people don't abide by or don't want to abide by or we don't think reflects the town out of there, and we want things added to the ordinance that reflect how people actually are living in the town and using the property and their land.
Right.
So it was like really, and we started by going through the table of uses
And we did change and add to and take away a lot of the uses. Like we added a horse stable because we thought, you know, y'all's got these boys and they can have a little ranch house, little houses that people would come and stay if the kids wanted to open up a, you know, riding stable. Or, I don't know, a bull fighting ring or something. How about that?
I used to have rodeos, but
Yeah, I think liability got too much, yeah. But anyway, that's just briefly what, but the whole thing, the land use planning, seemed to be huge, and a lot of us couldn't get our, I mean, it was just really complicated.
We didn't use the word zoning.
No, the Z word. No.
So land use, not talking about zoning, but we couldn't even get there.
Well, it took us on community identity. I mean, it was a different problem. It was just so vague and so amorphous. It took a while to really kind of get to.
Yeah, where?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Open spaces.
And supporting ranching and.
Yeah.
But this isn't the end.
So.
Yeah. This is your segue to.
Yeah. I'm. I feel like Charlie McCarthy. this has been a really fantastic project, in my opinion, what everybody did this winter, and what you've come up with, and the direction to planning, and topics for further discussions, and working things out, and you know, I just hear a town that is incredibly strong and incredibly resilient and incredibly one that values every person in it. And I'm just, you know, I've said it before and I've said it all through this process, I'm just in awe of that. And this is my last Planning Commission meeting, and it is in very good hands. We have a fantastic zoning administrator who has the knowledge and the background and the experience that we need so we can move away from what we thought was the rule just because it had always been. We actually can learn and get our hands on things and get resources. Well, you all can. And then Peg, who's been fantastic and supportive, and Sethe. And I value you so much, and it has been an amazing experience, frustrating sometimes, but I do value every person who's sitting in this room, and others who aren't, but I think you're going to keep your town, however you want that town to look like, you're going to keep your town, and I'm just so glad I could be part of that process, so yeah, and I'll go home. The informal meeting without a quorum is adjourned. Public comments if you have comments. I mean, you've been commenting all night.
Yeah, I want to say one thing. It's just all the different things I said on everything. It's the one thing there's some things I didn't hear that I kind of want. But it's really just really looking into the future of what everyone's talking about now and need this. We've got to have this now and how. You know, and not really projecting and thinking about. I never ever heard anybody say, you know, what kind of growth we want, and what kind of rate we want, how fast we want to grow. I never heard anybody say that. I never heard anybody say, well, how fast do we think we want to grow? You know, we want to, you know, we want to do all, make all these changes and have all this, provide all these opportunities and all this growth. Mm-hmm. How much growth do we really want? Do we want 3%, 10% a year? And what do we want to, how big do we want to be? I never heard anybody say, well, how big is the biggest you want to see Boulder? I never heard that one time for anybody. You know, would it be in so I don't think we're looking far enough into the future. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we all live in the present, mostly, but I don't think that we're, because that's what we're planning kind of in city places, you know, planning for
the future
beyond us. You know, beyond our subjective approaches and more of an objective view of different things.
Economic development, and they did bring that up in some of their bullet points. I'll give you a copy of that because I printed one out in case Donna Jean came, so you can have that and see it. They did touch on it, but I think that's, I mean, that is a whole discussion on its own that should be had. And that kind of ties in with, you know, the annexation plan. It's like,
the future. What is growth, and what voice do you want to have? And tourism, it's a hard one to get, you know, how do you control tourism? You've got that tourist board, it's on steroids.
Well, you guys keep talking about water caps.
Well, if we're about to close, I'd like to thank Carla for kicking this whole effort off. I mean, it's been really fascinating. As far as I know, it's never, nothing like this has ever been really done on this scale. And, so thank you for doing that. And we'll keep rolling and hope some good things come out of it. And you'll have part of a legacy here. Well, you're making pastries in Alaska.
We still have the
meeting on the 20th.
The 20th.
That's the open house. It hasn't been put out there. It will be put out there. We just
at 7 p.m. Yeah. In the big room. And what I'm trying to liken it to is, you know, tables, a little, what do you call those, triptych deals?
That's what I call them, but I don't think in science.
Some kind of display where you can actually put up things people can read or map. Or you guys had some nice drawings and illustrations of examples of housing you might want to blow up and make it more visible. And so, yeah, it's sort of like that RPG idea, only not sitting down and talking as a unit as much as kind of wandering around and talking to each other at the different tables.
It would be nice to have maybe a clipboard that people can write down just little comments.
Yeah, for sure. We'll have a clipboard for people interested in signing up for the next go-around next winter.
And topics they could be interested in.
We want to ask anybody
that. And extended topics, like some people now are interested in more, you know, kind of drill down into something. So, yeah. So we will have clipboards out with various signages and refreshments. And this will be open to the public. This isn't just the groups. This is anyone who wants to come in and ask questions, see what was talked about. And then, hopefully, the Planning Commission is there. And they will, I mean, all this stuff, like your reports and all that, will go there anyway. But yeah, kind of interaction will be nice.
And since everybody has been spending all winter talking about the town, going over ordinances, going through the general plan, really getting into this, there are some fantastic candidates for Planning Commission. So, and you all know who you are. But so there'll be a sign up for that. You know, someone who's interested in
it.
Yeah. And I would just like to say,
you didn't read her response to an email. It's like one word. Like, really?
Well, no. Carla hasn't been in her position all that long, but she has certainly catalyzed some very important things. And so it's going to be a whole left here without you. And she answers her emails. I'm just like, I love it. So, anyway. Thank you.
The economic
development.
That was the economic development group that Colleen had. They did their public meeting a long time ago. That Lonnie summarized. If I summarized, she summarized, and hers are better. So.
No, I didn't.
I didn't email it to the rest of them. I just brought a copy.
Reading a hard copy, not only computerized helps that help. Yeah, when I get something. Oh, yeah. When you get ready, I can
heard
the version.
I brought Daniel Kennedy document.
Since there's some typos I'm not sure about.
I just know that. Yeah, I mean, just the easy one. But I don't know. There's miscellaneous documents.
That would be
kind
of
good.
I don't know. I have the old.